Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard, ready to spray bug control at Menards. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce ready-to-spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Day 25 of World Cup 2018 is done. It's an off day for World Cup games, but not an off day for us. Brian Strauss joins me today and every day from Russia through July 15th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. In this episode, I'm also joined by a really interesting guy. I think you'll like him, Jaime Macias of BN Sports. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss from St. Petersburg. I am in Moscow. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I've been in my room all day, working on a story. Actually, that's a lie. I did go. I went to the ATM. I got some cash.
because you don't have a credit card and can't use it.
I don't have a credit card. And tomorrow, back in action. I feel like I've been laid up. I feel like I've been on IR. But back in action tomorrow with some exciting pregame press conferencing. With Didier Deschamps and Roberto Martinez.
And, fuck.
As we get ready for the varsity semifinal, which doesn't feel as varsity now. That was like a silly joke at the beginning when the brackets kind of came out. But now that Brazil is gone, now that France still like hasn't blown the doors off. And now that sort of Croatia and England have sort of proven their mettle, they're a bit more evenly balanced now. So here we are getting ready.
Well, just do a favor for me and at the press conference tomorrow for National American Pride here, ask a good question.
All right. As soon as I file this story, I'll spend the rest of the night meditating and I'll pray to Jobu and try to come up with something that isn't embarrassing or stupid.
Can I get something off my chest here about my issues with Twitter?
I think essentially that's all this podcast has been now for like a week and a half.
Pretty much.
Is that therapy? Go for it.
Yeah. So basically, the UK media on Twitter has had a lot of fun with a response I made to it was public, so I own it. To what can best be described as a troll of U.S. soccer journalists, a pretty regular troll, just hammering that U.S. soccer media doesn't know anything. And usually I'm smart enough to not respond to trolls, and this time I was not. And all I said was something that you and I kind of both know, but it's probably better off not being declared publicly for any number of reasons, which is, actually at most of these World Cup press conferences, the U.S. journalists tend to ask useful questions, and traditional soccer countries don't always do that. And you and I don't even have to think twice about saying that because we've been to so many press conferences over the years. But it also isn't to say that we don't have bad questions coming from Americans at press conferences.
I've heard a lot of – there are a lot of English writers here and British writers here, and I've heard plenty of their questions, and most of them are very good. So the fact that they – like, do they think you're talking about them? Are they making it about them?
Because
I don't remember you saying anything about, like, English writers specifically being like not up to the task. Usually
no.
they're very insightful. So I'm not sure why they've decided to make this personal. I don't think you ever made it personal.
Yeah, I never mentioned or even thought of UK journalists. I will say that, like, basing some sort of national stereotype on this type of thing, especially when press conferences are really soulless, soul-crushing exercises sometimes, I can get not putting too much mental energy into that or stock in that. But yeah, it's been an interesting one to see the response coming from the UK, who seemed to think that I attacked them when I didn't. But anyway, Twitter for you.
I will say that while I enjoy, they're brilliant. They're brilliant journalists. They're brilliant writers. I've enjoyed reading a lot of them.
Yeah.
Here, you know, I've read Rory Smith is excellent. Keir Radnage is excellent. There's the guy who wrote the story on Mbappe who's so good. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Jonathan Liu?
Yeah, yeah.
He's fantastic, so, yeah.
Yeah, but they all think it's Sporting Kansas.
Yeah.
They do. They all – they don't – none of them understand that Kansas City is the name of the place. And so as long as that remains a constant, I'm always going to sort of – my respect for them will hover only at 99.9%. That 0.1% being reserved for when they recognize that Kansas City, your hometown, is the name of the place.
We'll get there someday.
Otherwise wonderful. God, the guy from the Daily Mail, I've seen him a couple times, but I've been embarrassed to say anything to him. I remember having dinner with him one night in Cape Town in South Africa, as opposed to a different Cape Town. And oh God, what's his name? Anyway, he was really, really cool to me and spent the evening with me and sort of, you know, it was my first World Cup and I was going to say I was clueless, but then people will say, well, what's different? Nothing. But no, they're the best. They're the best. I mean, the stuff that we laugh at is the soliloquies, is the rambling incoherent statements, and people get up and plus unabashedly they're fans, you know. Yeah. You've made us all proud today. You've disappointed us all today. Like, why are you saying this to the coach? You know? No, it is a unique part of a World Cup. And dude, never tweet, man. Just don't tweet.
I think that's probably, from a mental health perspective, the best way to go. You know, like, I've totally enjoyed this World Cup. I've enjoyed everything about my work, whether it's with Sports Illustrated or Fox or this podcast. The interview that's coming up later here with Jaime Macias of BN Sports is just an example of how much I've enjoyed getting to meet people in person that I've gotten to know on social media.
Yeah, you really being in that nexus where you are. Like, how many times have we been talking and, you know, like, you know, the ghost of Johan Cruyff walks by. Like, it's crazy. And he says hello.
It's been incredible, actually. I watched an entire game almost with Ruud Gullit, who came by the Fox shipping container that they've made into a green room. And had a great time talking to Ruud Gullit, who might or might not have known that I had written the book about his time during the LA Galaxy.
Not flattering, if I recall.
I just reported what the facts were about the Ruud tenure.
Fair enough. But those were not flattering facts. They were not flattering facts.
But he was so much fun just to watch a game with. He was fascinated with American stadiums. He loves American sports. And what was so great was he was talking about the Atlanta stadium, Mercedes-Benz, and he kept calling it the Atlanta Hawks stadium. And I didn't correct him just because he was so excited about talking about the stadium. But it sort of reminded me that he actually really enjoyed his U.S. experience. He just didn't do much work.
That's right. There was a lot. That's right. The book, there was stuff about, like, about him getting coffee, right? That was pretty much what he did. But he's Ruud Gullit.
You know, and then
I would get his coffee. I would totally get him his coffee without complaining.
And then yesterday, Jurgen Klinsmann is here. He's doing some BBC work, I think. And I saw him from about 150 feet away, and I was in a rush to get to a place I had to be. So I'll say hello, a proper hello at some point. But yeah, Jurgen is on the scene.
Yeah, he's tweeted out some photos of him with Lineker and Alan Shearer and some of those guys. I have not seen him, and I'm sure he's real disappointed about that.
But yeah, I wanted to talk about something that we talked a little bit before we started recording here about the four teams that are in the semis. And this is definitely the case with three of them. And I need to do more research on Croatia, the fourth. But with France and with Belgium and with England, you have a very clear example when you look at the roster of so many contributors from so many different ethnic backgrounds, is just the best way to put it. Different, countries, different races, all coming together on this team that has been, these teams that are so successful at this World Cup. And I remember talking to Roberto Martinez, the Belgium coach for my book, and he told me that one of the things that he made him so excited about taking the Belgium job was not just the immense talent in terms of the individuals on the team, but how many different backgrounds they came from and how many different playing styles they had. You know, he's like, you know, Romelu Lukaku is very different in playing style from Eden Hazard, and they're different from Kevin De Bruyne, and they're different from Marouane Fellaini, but they're all really talented players. Well, he didn't say that about Fellaini, but...
no way.
That was harsh. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's an amazing diss. That's pretty awesome.
He did
work against Brazil.
Yes.
You know, that's not fun what he was asked to do against Brazil, and he did it. So,
yes.
So props to Sideshow Marouane.
Yeah. I mean, the point I would make, I guess, out of all of this is that you and I have run into people in the U.S. who, when we're talking about, you know, what does the U.S. need to do? You hear a lot, oh, the U.S. needs to find an identity, a United States playing style. Argentina has a style, and Germany has a style.
You just mentioned a guy who believes that.
Jürgen.
Yeah.
And I've also heard people sort of use that to say, well, whoever comes in as a coach is going to have to make some hard decisions about which players to use and which players not to use in the U.S. because certain players just aren't going to fit the style that we choose to have. And you can't help but come away from that thinking, so is this a rationale to basically not use Latino Americans in the national team or other types of Americans, hyphenated Americans or whatever, in the national team because they don't fit this chosen identity, chosen style? And then I look at France and Belgium and England, and they use their diversity to their advantage. So help me out here.
If not their advantage, I don't know that England is using diversity to its advantage as much as it is allowing the diversity to happen. You know what I mean? They're not excluding people. They're not saying we have a certain way of playing, and because you have this kind of background or grew up learning the game this way or approach the game in this way, you're therefore not welcome. They are doing what teams and coaches and programs should do, which is saying, here's who we have, here's what they're good at, let's put them in position to do what they do well. And that's what good coaches do. That's what Jürgen never did. And it's a big reason why the USA is not in this World Cup. It's not because of prioritizing one kind of player over another. So the big sort of sea change in Europe with this outlook, this approach, was of course France in 1998. Right, it was the black blanc beur, right? The black players, the white players, and then sort of the North African influence, and how these guys came together. You know, you had Didier Deschamps, you had Lilian Thuram, you had Zinedine Zidane, and you had this whole group of very diverse players who obviously were brilliant and deserved world champions that year, and that was going to herald a new thaw. But of course it didn't, because people are jerks and you know, we treat each other like garbage based on really dumb things. So look, I'm a big believer that you figure out what your best players do best and you build a team around that, right? So Landon Donovan is a good example. Landon Donovan was the best U.S. player during his era. What was he really good at? All right, he was really good at unbalancing teams on the run. He was really quick. He played quickly. He moved the ball quickly. He took space with the ball, you know. So put him in position to run at the opposition. Put him in position to have the ball at his feet in space, right? So the best way to do that is maybe to sit back a little bit, you play in a bit of a lower block, have structure, and then sort of let Donovan lead you on the break. And that team, you know, played Brazil in the Confederations Cup final. That team beat Spain. That team finished first in its World Cup group. So because it was built around what its best players did best. And so if you plan a team, I think, based on anything else, you're asking for trouble. Especially when you're dealing with what is essentially the finished product. If you're coaching 6-year-olds and you can really hone them at a very basic level and work on certain kinds of techniques and certain kinds of approaches, great. But when you're a national team coach, you're getting essentially the finished product, right? You're getting players that are already professionals. They're already developed. You're not going to change them into something else. You're going to have to, in the short time you're together as the national team coach, make them the best at what they already are and at what they can be. And so, yes, I think saying that you're going to, you know, play in a certain style and perhaps exclude talented players, it seems like nonsense.
I also think that the U.S. sort of has had an identity when it's been good, which actually disappeared largely under Klinsmann, which is, you know, no matter what your background is, be hard to play against, be better than the sum of your parts as a team. You know, and that's stuff that doesn't necessarily need to be sacrificed if you add skill to that.
Agree. Another thing I think is that maybe the Black, the Blanc, and the Burr aren't so different when you bring them all to Clairefontaine, starting when they're teenagers or however young kid. You know what I mean? Like these are countries that are a bit smaller. It's easier to get from place to place. It's easier to bring kids together. One of the things Southgate, again, talking about chemistry, talking at the power of sort of cohesion. I mean, one of the things that some of the, and again, the vaunted English writers have brought up here is that, you know, for a lot of these English guys, they've sort of come up together. They've known each other. Who plays for Manchester United and who plays for Chelsea doesn't matter as much as it used to. You know, they have a sense of being. They see their England teammates as teammates, and some of that comes from proximity, and some of that comes from interaction and familiarity. You know, you talk to people, you get to know them. They're not strangers anymore, and that's just going to be harder for us. Because a kid in New Jersey is not going to spend that much time getting to know the kid in Arizona. And if the kid in New Jersey is a suburban kid from a Italian neighborhood in Essex County, and the kid in Arizona, you know, has got Mexican parents and grew up watching Liga MX games on TV and understands soccer in a different kind of way, maybe they'll be, I don't know. We got to figure that out. We got to figure out how to get them, because I don't want to sacrifice either of them. And so we got to figure out a way to make them as comfortable and familiar playing with each other as they've managed to do with, you know, Kevin De Bruyne and Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah. I think it's a worthwhile discussion to have. I also would add that Croatia, I haven't done enough research, but I do know that, like, you know, Rakitic, you know, was born in Switzerland, played for Swiss youth teams. You know, they have maybe not a bunch of different races, but like they have guys of different backgrounds. You know, Vida last night got in trouble for pro-Ukraine stuff that he was saying after the Russia game.
Luka Modric is an X-Men.
By the way, I've been pointing out that Luka Modric is somehow underrated even though he plays for Real Madrid. I think Rakitic is somehow underrated even though he plays for Barcelona.
He's, you know, that's the power of the World Cup. It's the power of the stage and the spotlight. These guys are really good. I don't know, like, we spend you're kind of right, but you're also kind of like, I mean, come on, he plays for Barcelona. We all watch these guys every single week. You know, they play for two of the four biggest teams in the world, and I'm not going to sit here and say which the other two are, you'll have to guess. So
UK media might come after you, man.
We all
think you're talking about the UK.
I mean, I had Croatia going to the quarterfinals and had them going out to Spain because I bought into the Spain hype, right? But I Croatia once Spain Croatia being here, even though they had to win twice on penalties, it's not that big of a surprise. You know, they are loaded with players who are at top clubs, and as I'm writing today, you know, I'm writing about sort of the European hegemony at the World Cup. And why that might be, because obviously, you know, the top Latin teams and even the top African teams have players playing at all the best clubs in the world. So why is that not enough for them to get to the semifinals and the final? But it has been enough for Europe now for four straight World Cups.
I would also say about Croatia, though, that anyone who's writing a story about Croatia, about how they made the semifinals, has to acknowledge that, one, their qualifying was a disaster for the most part. They got rid of their coach right toward the end of it. They somehow miraculously end up qualifying, having to get a win late at Ukraine, I think. And the federation has been a disaster. You had actual court cases where players have taken sides against each other and against federation officials, and the Dinamo Zagreb boss, where Modric was actually charged with perjury in the case, and Kramaric took it the opposite side and basically was the white hat guy trying to do the right thing. And that's chaos. You know, you remember the Euro in 2016 when like the Croatian fans like tried to, you know, just, you know, kill their own team. They were throwing flares and stuff on the field, and it was just an absolute mess. And here they are, having somehow gotten through all that, and I guess, you know, in a sense, on the field they have the talent, but it's not just about talent. They've also found a way to get here to the semifinals.
But think about that's all fascinating. Like that should be your next book. That's everything you just said is riveting. What was I going to say? But if you can overcome all that, then France hasn't endured nearly any of what you just said, but they also haven't really played that well, right? I mean, this has been a theme of this World Cup and a theme of our podcast over and over is come on, Didier, let's go. Add a second gear, please. But they're still in the semis and weren't ever really challenged to get here. So if you're not even playing that well and you sort of just like second geared your way into the World Cup semifinals, then you're probably really freaking good. You know, and the same with Croatia. I mean, if you all the reason that in a way it shouldn't be a surprise, they're so talented that they've overcome all of the nonsense and sideshow idiocy that you've just described to get here. They must be loaded, you know. And it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, they have the extra day of, you know, they're not playing till Wednesday, I guess. That team has been through a lot over the past couple games and has been worn down and run hard. Has some you know, looks like some niggling injuries here and there. It'll be interesting to see how they are able to sort of shape up against England, which is really riding high, and that damn song and all that stuff. So so you would ask about the Three Lions song. And it's funny because they've turned that, it's so big, I guess, that that's become the tease for that episode of the podcast. Like on SI Twitter, they've been saying like, here's an explanation for that song you can't get out of your friggin' head. And we talked about it for like 15 seconds. And it's become, I guess, you know, they do the SAO shit and they found that, oh man, let's tease Football's Coming Home because that's what people are listening to while they smash up IKEAs.
It's amazing. So I heard that. I saw what you did there. I get the sense that football, soccer theme songs for tournaments sort of went by the wayside after the 90s. And, you know, there are some really wonderful unintentional comedy tournament soccer theme songs. Like if you look up on Google or YouTube, like the U.S. 1994 video It's fantastic. It's a bunch of
Hall and Oates or something.
Yeah, it's like guys on the beach wearing, you know, stonewashed denim and no shirts and.
Yeah. Stonewashed denim was the official textile of World Cup USA 1994.
Exactly. And, you know, those were the days of the Super Bowl shuffle. And, you know, there's another one if you look up the German team for, I think, 94, maybe 90.
Oh, yes.
Village People Germany World Cup song.
Flint's Village People cameo. Yes.
And it's absolutely fantastic. And I just wish, I was actually going to suggest this to Fox if the U.S. had qualified, that they somehow persuade the U.S. team to do something like that again for the World Cup and get a song together and do the old Super Bowl shuffle type video. Unfortunately, the U.S. did not qualify.
Maybe they threw the game in Trinidad to avoid that. But, I think we find how do you lose to Trinidad's right now I know.
It was funny, we just pitched the idea with Fox to the team that day. But it makes you wonder, like, if this song from England from Euro 96, just from hosting it, has had such a powerful impact for so long on so many people from England, why don't we see more theme songs like this?
I don't know. I mean, we do enough navel gazing, right? I mean, we're almost as into our own, you know, soccer misery as they are. So at least on a relative scale, you know, on a per capita, not on a, you know, not on an absolute scale, obviously. That's a really good question. I thought one of the 2010 songs was kind of catchy. There were several, not the Waka Waka silliness. There was another one that they played that I thought was kind of catchy in South Africa.
Waving flag was great. But like, there's been a World Cup soundtrack for forever, and there still is. But the actual
now
team,
it's White Stripes.
The actual team music video, like the Super Bowl Shuffle, like the Germans with the Village People, like the U.S. guys out on the beach, that just doesn't happen anymore.
You're right.
We should do one for Sports Illustrated for the Women's World Cup next year. Like you and me. And Luis Miguel Echegaray and Avi Creditor, our editor, and I'm going to start writing a song and planning the video now.
I'm going to go. If you do that, I'm going full on Cuba, man. I'm gonna sandbag everything.
All right, let's call it a day. Thank you, my friend.
Off day podcast.
You gotta love the off day podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. Let's talk then. Big thanks to Brian Strauss. Next up is my interview with Jaime Macias. Let's turn to our interview section of the podcast now. We've been doing this every day, and I've had a wonderful time with people I know, people I've maybe met on social media that I'm finally meeting in person. And included in that group is my friend Jaime Macias of BN Sports, who joins me now here in Moscow. Jaime, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure is mine, Grant. Finally, we'd meet in person.
Finally, it's about time. That has been such a fun part of this World Cup for me. And you've been covering World Cups for a while. What stands out to you as we are heading into the semifinals about this World Cup?
How much tactics evolve? Because we don't see those tactics evolve on a club level, because you could sign any player you want and play the style the coach wants to play. On national teams, I think they are forced to adapt their thoughts on the players they have. And we've seen from the false nine on South Africa to the teams that have fast wingers in Brazil. And now we are going back to some very strong tactical defensive teams that had performed very good in Russia.
Such as?
Such as Iran, such as Russia, Sweden, Denmark. I think Croatia in some parts of the games had also played with that philosophy.
One thing tactically that also stood out to me in this tournament is Uruguay has done well once again with two really good forwards, Cavani and Suarez. But they seem almost unique as a team these days, because how many front twos have we seen that are really good anymore?
No, though, I think those two and their capability of adapting, because now we have the top stars on soccer, they are so dependent of the midfield of their teams. Mm-hmm. And when they go to national teams, they couldn't perform on that level. And that said, Messi, Neymar, Cristiano Ronaldo, Diego Costa. And these two guys adapt to that. They know they don't have a great offensive midfield, and they take the responsibility. And if you see, sometimes Suarez comes from the middle of the pitch, and sometimes Cavani comes from the middle of the pitch, and they make a team that it's really an unbalanced team, a very balanced team.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you live in Miami now, you work for beIN Sports, your background is from Ecuador. This World Cup is very different from the World Cup of 4 years ago, the one in Brazil, where South American teams, teams from the Americas, did quite well, even though they didn't win the tournament. This World Cup has been dominated by European teams, and not just the expected European teams. Even some of the expected European teams, like Germany and Poland was a top seed, really didn't do well at all. But it's the mid-level European teams in many cases that seem to have done quite well. And the South American teams are out before the semifinals. Is there anything to take away from that? Is this just a coincidence? And if this was 4 years ago, we would be talking about something completely different.
No, it's not a coincidence. I think that the distance in soccer have come shorter. And from the distance to get shorter, somebody have to give a little step backward, and I think those were Spain and Germany, and they are going to go forward again in any time soon. It's just an unlucky break, because especially Germany, we didn't see a crack on that team before the World Cup. Spain, with the sacking of the coach, and something weird was going to happen. We didn't expect that it was going to be that fast, but the way that those mid-European teams had been working on developing, these teams are not working from Brazil, neither from South Africa. They're working since the end of Germany 2016 on trying to find talent, to build a structure, to find the way of their players to still develop outside of their leagues. Because if we remember, after the 2002, most of the Belgian players play in the Belgian league. Mm-hmm. And the Belgian league is not one of the top six leagues in the world.
Right.
And they develop players, and they let them go to more developed countries, and they perform better. The structure of the Nordic teams, I think it's the most impressive. They base their collecting of players at a young level on discipline, mental strength. There are teams that have two or three very talented players from the middle of the pitch forward, mm-hmm. but on the back, it's a team that doesn't make a single mistake on a game. Actually, it's a set piece, the one that opens the game against England.
Brazil in particular is a team that once Germany was out, once Argentina was out, once Spain was out, people were like, oh, this is Brazil's tournament now, and now they're gone. What happened to Brazil?
The World Cup, it's in a great matter. Not how you qualify for it, it's how you get to it. And I think the best moment of the Brazil national team was at the end of the South American qualifier, mid-December 2016. And we can compare it with what happened with Argentina of Bielsa in 2002. You get to qualify for the World Cup in an amazing form, but you are still 1 year and a half away.
Yeah.
And the momentum of the players changed, their situations changed, and I think that happened to Brazil. That dominant team, from that starting 11, only Alisson had improved his level from what happened a year and a half before. And then we have a second part. It's something we were talking. It's the mental strength.
Yeah,
Brazil have amazing talent, amazing coach, a great tactical planification for the game against Belgium. But the mental impact of receiving the first goal took them 30 minutes to react. And that let Belgium manage the game, change the system for a system on defending a 2-0, not proposing an offensive match, and Brazil didn't have an answer for that.
When you talk about the mental side of things, you're South American originally. Is there something about South American teams in your mind and the mental side of the game, or is there not?
No, I think there is.
There is.
Yeah. It's based on education and formation and the way the pure education in the way the kids are formed in South America and how they are immediately exposed without a psychological preparation to maximum pressure. And what I mean pressure, it's not just because of the fans wants the team to win. Mm-hmm. It's because those kids, from one day to another, became the support of the family. Mm-hmm. I think that in parts in Europe and in North America, in other sports, you develop that mental strength because you are coming through phases. To being the better player in high school, to being the better player at college, to being the first pick. And then you are exposed to being the star of a big team or a big crowd. In South America, you are one day a substitute player in an under 16, and the next day you are the guy who have to save the team on a big match. So there is not a psychological preparation. It's kind of getting lucky on being prepared or being born with that mental strength, not being developed in you.
Are you saying in a way, because everyone will cite, oh, Lionel Messi was 13 when he went to Barcelona, mm-hmm. and he made it fairly quickly. Is that something that is just so rare, so unusual, that you're saying that it's just not common enough?
The what happened with Messi?
Yeah.
I think it was easier for him because he was surrounded by a bigger structure. Hmm. At Barcelona, mm-hmm. where he just have to focus on playing and develop his talent that he have it. Probably he will become one of the best players in the world, starting in Argentina, but not as fast as he did in Barcelona. It's mm-hmm. it's just like there is a point where the player had to focus on play and develop his personality and develop his skills and growing also as a person. And in South America, there is, in parts of South America, a desperation of the player to perform immediately and then being sold, and there is so many issues around that the player have to face that mm-hmm. it's not just developing skills and being a good player.
And one of the stories about Mexico in this tournament, I thought, was Imanol Ibarrondo, the Spanish psychologist yeah. that has been working with the Mexican team and Juan Carlos Osorio for quite a while. And it really did seem, I spent a fair amount of time with these guys in talking to the players about how they were responding to it. It really did seem like this had made a difference for the Mexico team, not just during this tournament, but over the last 2 years. Should we take Mexico not finishing the tournament the way they wanted to after a good start as sort of an invalidation in any sense of that psychological work, or just that's what happens in a tournament, somebody has to lose?
No, I think that there is a psychological point, because it's not the same being brave when you face a team that it's stronger and better than you, maybe on the pitch or maybe on history. And that's what Mexico did. Mexico play 1-1 against Germany and beat them, and play 1-1 against Brazil and have the match open until the last minute of the 90 minutes. That's being brave. And I think that part of the psychological work, Mexico give a step forward. But then comes the other part. When you are facing a team that it's not as good as you, that you are better, and you have the obligation of getting the result. Mm-hmm. And there's where Mexico cracks. And cracks so badly that a 1-0 loss was transforming a 3-0 loss. And that cost them the first part of the group and not getting their first objective, that was not facing Brazil.
Yeah, because I just think people will look back at Mexico's World Cup and look at it as this huge missed opportunity based on what happened in the first two games. The route to getting beyond the round of 16 was dependent on the Sweden result.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, and that's part of the mental strength. Getting the the momentum to perform on the level you are supposed to perform when you have to obligate the obligation to do it.
Yeah.
And Mexico that day was obligated to perform, and that's something I think they couldn't manage.
Yeah. So let's look at the four teams that are left here. We've got France against Belgium. We've got Croatia against England. What stands out to you about these semifinals?
The diversity, I think, on the different ways that have come through this generation of players on the different teams to get to the same position, semifinals of a World Cup. Everybody's talking about the formation of England and how they developed the young system and how they won all the young tournaments, and Southgate is the coach who was managing. But not every team is the same. I think that we can compare a little bit about Belgium because this generation of players was selected a long time ago and they all performed. But Martinez have never managed in the Belgian league.
Yeah.
He didn't speak French before getting the national team, and how that two parts from different directions make a click and develop. I think Premier League has something in common because these players consolidate their soccer skills there, and Martinez also consolidates his managing. But then you got the opposite side on Croatia. Most of these teams are of these players. They haven't been living a long time in Croatia. Rakitic was born in Sweden, and he played for Swiss under teams, and then you get this amazing midfield that makes everything to balance the lack of offensive play of their defense, and then everybody talks about these guys, and appears a goalkeeper that was signed very cheap when Monaco was in the second division of the French league, and now he's the hero because I know Modric and Rakitic are amazing players, but Croatia is here because Subasic
has been fantastic. Subasic
has been fantastic, and take outside the penalties, has been fantastic on the matches, and he played 30 minutes injured, and we don't know if he's gonna play the next match or not, but he has been fantastic. And and then we go to France, and we find out that the French national team, one of the top five leagues in the world, most of the players haven't played that much on their league.
Yeah.
Griezmann never played in the French league. Varane never played in the French league. And then Lucas Hernandez never played in the French league, and he was signed on the player on for the team just for the World Cup. It's so different what they've done. Pogba never played in the French league. And they develop, and I think they were the first one to find out this number nine, not striker player.
Mm-hmm.
Because the job of Giroud, it's open room for everybody that comes behind. So,
right.
And they have a lot of pressure because what happened on the European Cup at their soil was a big, big thing for them. And I think that we have four very different ways of getting here on the semifinals.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I think there are certainly common trends you can look at with the four teams, but there's also very different situations. Croatia just got a coach a few months ago, nearly failed to qualify. There are certain parts of process, I think, that process is very, very important. But there's also luck involved in a tournament to get to where you want to be. And I think people are being a little critical maybe of England, saying, well, who have you really beaten to get here? And I get that, but every World Cup is that way. There's going to be teams, before the tournament, we thought England-Germany was going to be that quarterfinal.
Yeah.
And England did what it needed to do to get there. Germany did not. And that's not England's fault.
Yeah.
There's
something I would love to change on the future on the World Cups.
What's that?
I don't like the run of 16 beating already seeded. That you know that you win your group, you play with the second of the other group.
I agree.
I think that should be the best group winner against the worst second place qualifier. So that way, it's a little bit more fair. For example, it didn't happen that way, but Mexico, it was a death sentence. You have Germany in your group, and if you finish second on that group, you will face Brazil. It's kind of, we have to try try and find a way which is better to always win the group.
Here's my proposal on this, because I have thought about this. I understand why it's difficult considering rest days in the World Cup, that you don't want to have a situation in the round of 16 where a team that has had five rest days plays against a team that has had two or even one.
Yeah.
I get that. But maybe you could at least take group A through D.
Yeah, the high part of the...
And then group E through H, and either do what you're saying and take how many points, like the high seed versus the highest seed versus the lowest seed in the round of 16 from those groups, or just do a draw. At least that way you wouldn't have any situations like we had with England and Belgium in the final group game of that group, where the team that lost the game was going to end up in probably the preferable side of the bracket.
Yeah, that way. And I you know, I like the draw thing, because that there you could put the pots, divide the pots on resting days, if you want to put it that way. Like,
yeah, and then maybe add a few more days to the tournament. Yeah. Not too many, I get that, but maybe a couple more days, just so that everyone, that no one would be able to complain about.
Yeah,
the
so
rest situation.
Yeah, so it's just trying to develop. But well, they just want World Cup less with this system. The other one is gonna have 48.
48. I'm trying to imagine what a 48 team World Cup is gonna be like, and it's actually kind of mind bending. Just in terms of three team groups. I know we're a ways off from 2026, but we'll see how it goes.
That's what I dislike the most, the three group teams.
Yeah.
All the other parts, there is a positive, but I don't know. It's maybe my mind, but I don't like in pair number groups, because there is always a team that is going to not be playing.
Yeah. Now, before we get into, I want to ask a little bit about your career path. Where can you be found on social media?
My Twitter, it's at Jaime F, my second name, Macias. And yeah, that's all my social medias. I got lucky and I opened it on time. So yeah. I have all the social media with the same name.
Nice, nice. And if you could share a little bit, what is your story about how you got to do what you're doing?
Well, I got to do what I'm doing because of my passion of motorsports.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really a motorsports fan. I have a motorsports fan, and there was a guy, a Peruvian guy, who called the IndyCar for South America, and he was my idol. I want to be like him. And when I was 15, my father also loved motorsports, and there was a broadcast for the Ecuadorian television for a Formula One race. There was a confusion. I don't know if they were calling my father or my father never want to go and send me, because we have the same name. Mm-hmm. And I arrived to the studio with 15 years old, and it was me or nobody to go the race. So I call it.
Wow.
Malaysia Grand Prix 2004. Schumacher won.
15 years old.
Yeah. And I had, there's a, I put the video on YouTube. When I saw my face, how they put me on air. But
I'm trying to go look this up after we talk.
Yeah. So yeah, I started like that, and they call me to, they stopped calling the races, but they have a show on Fridays. So I talked with my school, and the principal told me, okay, you could leave 1 hour early on Friday so you could go do your show.
Wow.
But you have to come back after. And I always come back. It was very close to my school. And that's how everything started. And then we go to soccer. At the same point, I was playing at a youth level of Emelec, a team in Ecuador.
Yeah.
So I was a goalkeeper. I get to be on the bench of the first squad one match. It's also on YouTube.
Nice.
And then I got some lucky breaks, because when I was doing practices on the first TV station with my former job, I was there. The girl who was doing the news was pregnant, and she happened to give birth 1 hour before the show, and nobody else was there. And I do the news. So I got some lucky breaks on the road.
Nice. And how did you end up getting to the United States?
I always want to get to the big league, so to the US, and I got an offer from Bein Sports in 2015 to do the Copa America just for 1 month. I didn't renew my contract because they were not letting me go for a month, and I said, okay, I'm not gonna renew
with your Ecuador.
Yeah, with Ecuador. I'm gonna take this shot, and if it doesn't work, I see what I do, but I hope it works.
Yeah.
And we went to Miami. I was there for the month. We do the Copa America. And at the end, there was not an offer. And my wife, she was pregnant, so she could not fly until the third month. So we were in Miami doing nothing. And 3 days later, they called me, "Hey, are you still in Miami? We need you to call a Galatasaray game. Don't worry."
Huh.
Third day, a MotoGP race.
Yeah.
And at the fourth day, they offered me to stay. And that's how we get to Bein Sports.
That's such, I mean, it's so fascinating to me. Just situations happen and you want to be in the right place at the right time. And when you get an opportunity, yeah, whether it's at the age of 15 or being in Miami because of the reason you had stayed,
yeah,
you make the most of it.
Yeah, I always talk. I did some conference in South America talking about the career and how achieve things if I have achieved something in my life. And I always say the kids, it's, you have to be ready.
Yeah.
Because the opportunities came on the most weird way.
Yeah.
And probably it's going to be the only time the opportunity came. And you have to be ready to get the most advantage of it. Maybe if I wasn't ready, the opportunities also came, but I wouldn't take advantage of them.
It's interesting. And we do have listeners to this podcast who send me stuff on Twitter or in other areas asking about career advice.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like I don't have great career advice because I broke in the 1990s when the media business was completely different than it is now. But there are some things I think that you can give in terms of advice for careers that are timeless, yeah, in a way. And I think what you're talking about is timeless. Be ready when the opportunity comes, even if you don't know when that opportunity is going to come.
One day it's going to come. And playing soccer, I also race cars. That was more like a hobby. But playing soccer at that level, it's something that helped me in my career. Not because of the analyst point. It's because I wasn't as good as the other two goalkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
But I always play. Because they didn't prepare. They didn't train right. They didn't know who they're facing. And I think, like, man, they are giving me so much advantage because I base most of what I do on preparation. I say, like, if one day I happen to have the talent of being good at something, I'm not going to give the room these guys are giving me.
Right.
Because I just balance everything on preparation. Then I couldn't develop more talent than what I have. And that's how I face things in life. It's like, you have to be the best, the one who most prepare in the room and take advantage of every situation.
Good stuff. Well, Jaime Macias, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
No, anytime, Brian. A pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss and Jaime Macias, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.